Hello and welcome to the Behind Closed Doors podcast. My name is Alicia Abberley and I'm so grateful that you've joined us in this space. Behind Closed Doors is all about the types of conversations that we only usually have with our best friend, our partner, our counsellor, our coach. And sometimes it's the conversations that we don't actually have with anybody else at all. The women that are interviewed in this space are all women that are making a difference to the planet. They're women that are inspiring and empowering. The intention is that you too will feel inspired and empowered by these conversations. So grab a cup of your favorite drink, pop your feet up, and enjoy this episode of Behind Closed Doors.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Behind Closed Doors. Today's guest has always been seeking for that missing something in life and had a great empathy for the suffering of humanity. Despite feeling a call to serve, she first endured much of her own trauma and suffering. In an attempt to feel her own pain, she went on a journey through darkness in her early 20s, suffering from an ice addiction, homelessness, and a myriad of mental illnesses. She is a qualified yoga and meditation teacher and also trained in NLP. She has a degree in Buddhist philosophy and psychology and is also a student of the metaphysical text, A Course in Miracles. Hello and welcome, Kate Gray. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited that you've joined us in this space.
I'm pumped.
Just have a moment of recognition there of how excited we both are. Love it. So you have a pretty colourful past and I feel really blessed that you're prepared to share that with us. It's really exciting when us women can do that. I love how we give other women permission to do the same. So thank you for sharing you with us. We're going to chat about self-realisation, modern day self-development and how we go from course to course to course, and then also surrendering into being rather than doing. Yeah, great. So let's start with a little bit of background on you.
Yes, awesome. So my background has been all encompassing, a little bit like a movie. I've done nothing by halves. I endured a fair bit of psychological and emotional trauma as a child. And I was blessed though that my uncle was a disciple of Osho. And he used to write me these beautiful letters right from when I was 6 years old, teaching me the truth of the universe and reality and the matrix. And that stayed with me. So when he passed, when I was about 12 or 13, I can't actually remember, all of the drugs have killed some of my short-term memory skills ourselves. Basically, I just went on this destructive path. Like, I had so much pain and suffering inside and I didn't have the skills to know how to deal with it. So I just went into partying, and partying led to harder drugs, ice, which is highly addictive. And it helped me in a way feel the pain, but obviously it's destructive. That and sleeping with a lot of people and just anything external to fill the hole that was actually in my heart. And now I'm here.
So amazing that from childhood, that hole in your heart that you talk about, did that come from for you, for that upbringing that you experienced?
Yeah. So my dad, who has passed now, and I'm completely at peace with him and forgiven him. And I'm so thankful for him, because I feel like sometimes when we've had a negative, and I don't really like good or bad, but say, let's just say negative for not a better word, relationship with parents when we're kids, we want to blame them for everything that went wrong. But if my dad wasn't the way he was, I never would have been the person I am today. So I'm grateful for that. He didn't like me very much. Every time something would go wrong in the house, the catchphrase would be, "Oh, Kate's home." If I told him I always had an issue with my weight, I'd be like, "Oh, Dad, I've lost weight." He'd be like, "Oh, where? Between your ears." Called me as useless as tits on a bull. Like, this was like a daily thing. He didn't know any better. But as a kid, you don't understand, you don't have the comprehension emotionally, intellectually to process that. So I carried that and it really put a hole in my heart.
As it would, absolutely. Yeah. Verbal abuse, I know there's no comparison to that. I guess verbal abuse though is much the same as physical abuse, right?
Totally. Absolutely. It scars us, but just in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So how old were you when you decided that that's not the life for you anymore?
The addiction and the partying.
Yeah.
I was around about 24, 25. So I've had a crazy past. At 18, I decided to become a Jehovah's Witness. This is all from the seeking, and nothing against Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't judge any religion. They all serve a purpose. I've always been seeking, and I thought that would solve my pain. So I went from this crazy teenage years of running away from home, partying, drinking goon bag, to then going, oh, I'll be a Jehovah's Witness. That will solve my pain.
I wanted to make that clear too. I wasn't laughing at the Jehovah's Witness part. I have respect for everybody too, but I was laughing at the contrast. It's so amazing how we bounce out of contrast, isn't it? Ice addiction, drugs, sex with lots of boys too. I'll be a Jehovah's now.
I'm going to knock on people's doors on a Saturday morning.
Yeah,
so in 24, 25, I went back to uni, and that's when I studied Buddhism. And that from there, everything shifted and changed. And it's funny, I found the letters from my Uncle Michael. My mum gave them to me when I was about 25 as well. And my dad passed away then too. So there's these big transitions. And watching my dad die was like, shit, once we die, that's it, right? Like, I don't want to have a life where I'm not happy. And so from that moment on, I just went, fuck, I'm going to do whatever it takes to find a way to free myself from suffering. And that kind of started it all.
Yeah, good on you. I think the best stories come from suffering.
Yes. I agree. I totally agree. Pema Chodron, she's a Buddhist nun. She's written a lot of books about suffering and how it's such a vehicle for us to awaken. And they were really poignant for me to shift from a victim mentality to leveraging what I'd been through to awaken.
Great. I'll have to Google her. Great. So let's have a dive into self-realization.
Yes. So for many years, I thought that a guru would realize me, or a teacher, or a degree, or a course, and I was just like the biggest like course whore. I would do all of them, and I had such an attachment to having to do more, and my spiritual ego was like the size of the universe. It was so big. And eventually I came home to self. And I realized that nothing outside of me can awaken me or enlighten me, because I'm already enlightened. I'm already awakened. It's simply a matter of remembering. And so I pretty much stopped seeking external things. My meditation practice was spasmodic. I did it whenever I pleased. I removed all attachments to anything external, whether it was classed as spiritual or not. And that really helped me shift into a different level of realization. Do I still think stupid things? Yes, I'm human. But I have a different relationship with those thoughts to what I used to.
How did you find the NLP? I'm an NLP practitioner as well. I'm a timeline therapist. And that totally shifted my whole entire world.
That helped me learn that I was in control. So it helped me understand that I can take ownership. And I can do that by using that tool. And then it helped me empower other people. So that was a big transition as well, from me going from victim to going, wow, I have these tools that I can actually help myself be a better human being. It was insanely amazing. That was a big moment.
I'm with you on that. Cause and effect was the greatest thing that I learned, that at any point, like, everything's our decision. And everywhere we are right now is because of every decision we've made, every action we've taken. And when we get that, and when we can look at that, there's no more place to go, is there? Like, you can't go back into victimhood, because it's like, oh, okay, hello, that was my decision. Or, oh, it's not my boss's fault that I don't like my job, it's mine. Really, really expands the mind, doesn't it?
It really does. And it's a really hard one, I think, for people as well, because it comes down to, even I was like, really small things. If I was running late, I would want to blame the traffic or blame my hair not going right. Just things like small changes like that, going, well, no, that was my fault. Yeah. Because I could have done X, Y, and Z differently and I didn't. Just owning like the little tiny things really helped me begin to own the bigger things.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And I teach all my clients that as well. sometimes it's very hard for them to take, but I think once you grasp that, then yeah, I think that's the quickest way, that realization around that, to actually shift your being and live deliberately.
Yes. And it is, I think, the crux or the foundation for transformation is ownership. Without that, we can't actually fully transform, like, at all. And that's where a lot of it a lot of people go wrong unconsciously, not realizing.
So how do you go with the course junkies? Like, I've done so many courses as well, like so many. And for me, it's been, I felt I've needed to learn something. So how do you differentiate between doing a course because, or doing a course to learn? Like, say you want to learn how to sew. It's not innately in you, so you need to do something. So you do a course for that, right? Or say you want to learn how to do marketing and you don't know how to do marketing. It's not within you. So when it comes to courses like that, how do you differentiate between being a course junkie and doing something that will serve you moving forward?
Yes, I think, like, for me, life is all about coming from a space of playing life rather than life playing me. So gathering tools and courses, if it's effective for my greater vision and it serves my purpose to moving to where I want to move, I will absolutely engage in them completely, but without attachment or expectation. It's about relinquishing the expectation for them to have any particular outcome and allow them to arrive in the way they need to arrive, because the divine or universal God knows better than us that how it should actually arrive. So it's relinquishing the attachment of how they're going to show up, which is the kind of the tough bit.
Letting go of that control, right?
Yeah, surrender, faith, two things that, my ego was like, fuck that, I'm not doing that, for like ages, a long time.
Well, we don't realize how much control we have until it's brought to our attention, just like we don't realize many things about ourselves or anything until it's brought to our attention, right?
That's so true. Like, you can only see what you can see.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, totally right, totally.
Yeah, great. And then moving into modern day self-development, like we talk about being, you know, being a course junkie or just doing a lot of courses in general, what's your take on modern day self-development?
Okay. It's an observation. So I'm coming from a place of awareness rather than a judgment. I see so many people seeking definitive answers and they go from psychic to guru to, and I did it, and that's probably why it triggers me and probably why I can see it. They want yes, no, right, wrong answers, and they're seeking externally, and they have these attachments to having to follow, you know, pay for every Tony, nothing wrong with Tony, every Tony Robbins course, going to all these programs, and they're seeking outside of themselves. And that in turn stops them from awakening because it's still an external distraction. And that is kind of, I believe, where a lot of coaches and teachers are going wrong, is that they are going, oh, well, I can help you, where they should be going, well, I can guide you back to yourself, because ultimately you have to help yourself. Huh. And people want, yeah, it's like, oh, yes, it's frustrating because we all want to make a living, and I get that, but that's all conditioning of the matrix. Like, no one is your God, no one is your guru, you are that yourself. So if anyone's saying that they are that for you, then chances are that's not going to lead you to the truth, it's going to lead you away from it. And I think self-development is kind of heading that way, which is, I guess it's perfect, it's how it's meant to be, right?
So would you say for the people that are, I guess, doing a lot of self-development in this space, I guess there's two parts to that, isn't there? Just from what you were saying before, that if it's going to serve you and it's going to help you for that next level, mm-hmm. as opposed to just doing course upon course upon course upon course because you think you need to be fixed, yeah. I guess then there's the difference, yeah?
Yes. Yes. Yes, totally. So for me, it all comes down to the whole thing of, are you playing the game or is the game playing you? So if you're doing the course in from a space of awareness, that the course in itself is just a tool, it's not the answer, it's not the solution, it's a vessel for you to come back to self, then there is no issue at all. Like, I'm going to go back and do the Bridge Advanced experience, which I did last year with Preston and Alexi, and I'm going to go to it from a space of awareness to see if I can play in that space of presence and using the course as a vehicle rather than me thinking it was the answer. Last year, that course like fucked me up. I was like, I thought I was like so on point, and I went and did that course and I was like a nervous wreck for 3 days. I was like, oh, I thought I was so much more awake. Anyway, it was perfect. But yeah, so it's that from that space. Great. If that makes sense. I think I'm making sense.
You are making sense. And I would love that information from you for the next course that they're running that you're talking about. Yeah, they've just got an amazing presence, don't they?
Oh, they are like, I've done a lot of I was so turned off self-development before I came back to them. And they care. They actually genuinely care. And they claim not to have the answers. It's all still coming back to us. So yeah, they're good. They're very good.
It's funny, isn't it? How, and not ha-ha funny, just interesting how there's an opinion and a decision for everything. And we get so caught up in that. Like I'm consciously and continuously pulling myself up, asking, is that my stuff or somebody else's? Like, do I believe that? Or is that my viewpoint? Or do I want to take that on as my own? And just to peel back those layers to actually go... It's very interesting, I find, that we can get so caught up in everybody else's labels and everybody else's way of being that we forget who we are. And is that part of A Course in Miracles where she teaches to come back to heart space?
Yes, absolutely. So for me, like, and again, this is interpretation, my perspective, it's all about coming from a space of action. So you choose the action, you choose what you engage in rather than be reactive. So rather than just responding without any space. So I like to think of it like I'm sitting and life's happening around me and there's like this air bubble between me and what's happening, and I choose what I want to bring in. And I know that the way I'm perceiving it is by choice, not by conditioning. And then I choose what goes back out. So it's coming from that place where everything is choice. Thoughts come, even if you're enlightened, we still think. We have an organic computer here, but they're not personal. They don't mean anything. And that is the space. That's the thing I think I learned from A Course in Miracles the most, is nothing means anything. When you can come from that space and see things like that, you can choose how you're going to engage with them rather than them choosing how you're going to engage. So we play life rather than it playing us. Mind is servant, not master. That's kind of the angle that I took from it.
Because we can interpret however we choose.
Yes, and it's so exciting because you can make anything that you want. It's awesome. It's all perception. Nothing's real. Like, it's perception. It's conditioning. Once you can see that, like, one of my teachers, Ramgiri Braun, who has a PhD in psychology, and he's also one of the first disciples of Maharishi in India with Ramdas. They're like spiritual brothers. He told me this story and I love it. And to me, this is kind of the matrix in realization itself, is that if you walk into a room and it's dark, particularly living in Queensland, and you see something in the corner coiled up, first thing is you think it's a snake. The nervous system reacts, emotions come, panic comes, you turn on the light and you realize that it's actually just a rope. That's our beliefs. Once we come to a space where we have choice, we can see that none of this is personal. None of them are actually snakes. There's nothing to fear. We turn the light on them and then we can choose to make them whatever we want.
Yeah, really interesting journey, shifting from one space to the other and shifting from and having the understanding. Just choosing that. And right now, for any of our listeners, if you want to change your thought process, you can right now.
Yes.
If something's bugging you, or if you're feeling sad about something, you're feeling angry about something, or you're just pissed off with the world in general, like at any point in time, you have the choice to say, I choose to change it as of right now.
Yes, it's a choice. It is a choice. And if you are saying it's not, you're fooling yourself. You're just a victim of the mind. It is a choice. The mind wants you to think it's not a choice because then it keeps you stuck in this familiar matrix bubble. It doesn't want us to self-realize because that's really unknown. That's terrifying for the mind. So yeah. Just choose.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, to look at that. Do you want to go a bit deeper into that for the mind?
It really comes down to, and it's so hard to say it to people because it triggers people. I love triggering people. It's one of my, I always say to my clients, if you're going to go on this journey with me, be prepared for me to piss you off. Because if I don't piss you off, I'm not triggering the mind. If the mind wants to attack me, I'm doing my job because I want to overcome that. I want to dissolve it. So you control it rather than it controlling you. We can never get rid of the mind. We can never get rid of thoughts. We can only change our relationship to them. So if you want to actually wake up, the first step, I believe, is ownership. Second step is awareness, being aware that that rope is a rope. It's not a fucking snake. Then the next step is just practicing every day in choosing exactly what you said. Every moment, it's a choice. Questioning every single thought. Is this true? Byron Katie, is it true? Is it 100% true? Most people I work with can't actually say to me when they come to me with their story that it's true, because mostly it's just their perception of, and their ego wants to validate their perception so bad it makes shit up. How many Chinese whispers? The ego does Chinese whispers with us. Like, we tell person one the story, by the time it gets to person 10 we've told, it's amplified by a million. So before you get past person one, start to question what you're saying. Where's this coming from? Is this mind? Is this ego? Is this real? Is it a rope or is it really a snake? It's just that ability to be aware of the thoughts without allowing them to just overtake you. Because if you do, it's like trying to stop a steam train. Like, if you get to person 10 validating your identity and story and then you try and stop there, forget it. Like, you might as well just have a nap and then restart.
You can never go past the sleep, can you? It's the best.
I say that to my clients. If it's getting too intense, have a nap. It'll make everything better.
Yeah, reset, recalibrate. It does work. Absolutely. Or have an orgasm. I was just chatting to a girl. Yeah. Like, one of the two, sleep or orgasm. It'll help every time.
Yeah, and it's they say, I read, and I'm really mindful of what I read, but they say that orgasming is a way that we can actually connect into pure awareness and presence. So it brings us that, and laughing, which is interesting because laughing apparently also is a way where you have to be present. So there you go. Have a laugh or have an orgasm or have a nap. There's three options.
Either three of them is perfect. Oh, have all three. Why not? There was something I was going to touch on there. The stories that we tell ourselves. I love this. You know, with my clients as well, that's something that I bring to light with them. I was chatting to one of my clients last week and we were talking about, I asked, what do you think is holding you back? Or what are your beliefs about yourself? And she said, I'm a beautiful client of mine. She said, I am shy. And then she gave me a few other things. And we went back over those. And I said to her, okay, so I'm just going to ask you, do you believe that you're shy? No, I'm not really shy. I just don't really like to talk to lots of people. I was like, wow. And it was such an interesting space to go, how cool, you've given yourself this label. It was the second time I'd heard her say that about herself. And because somebody else had told her she was shy, she developed that label on herself and was telling herself that day in, day out. But when she pulled that back, it's like, oh, no, I'm not really shy. And I think when we, I mean, you know this just as much as I do, Kate, as well, that when we pull this back, pull those layers back on that, it's like half the shit we tell ourselves is just bullshit.
Yes, and it's someone else's opinion. It's not even our opinion.
So questioning ourselves, I think when we're getting into the habit and learning to do this, when we say something and we're adamant about it, whether it's about ourselves, whether it's about something else, it's like just that pull back, you know, do I believe what I'm saying right now? Because we can get stuck in that trap, can't we? And in that circle of telling ourselves these stories. It's life.
It totally is life. And everyone's conditioned to do the same thing. So we have story parties. Like, there's people that are like, I used to be like this. Now I committed to not being this way. However, I had people in my phone list that I knew I could call to validate my story. Like, there's about five people that I knew that if I needed a pity party, I could call them, because that's what we're conditioned to do. Yeah. To validate. And this is kind of what shits me a little bit. It's perceived as support. It's not support. Validating somebody's story is disempowering them. But then if you start to challenge them, people get pissed off and they think that you're being an asshole, that you're not being supportive. In fact, though, we're being supportive by not validating their story. One of my clients said to me, I love how you're not compassionate, but that actually is compassion. And I'm like, yes, it's called compassion with wisdom. Because if you fall over and break your leg, do you want someone who runs up and goes, oh my God, I can't believe you've broken your leg, and has a panic attack with you? Or do you want someone who goes, oh, just call 000, just keep breathing? Like, that's the thing with compassion and support these days, and even in self-development, like, oh, tell me your story, share your breakdown. Well, that's great, but let's not wallow and validate that breakdown. Let's make a commitment and a choice to move away from it, because it's not real anyway. But people get pissed off, really pissed off with that.
And I guess too, on that, I think there's beautiful self-development, and I think from that perspective, there are some practitioners that perhaps do let you sit in that story. And I think they're, for me personally, I'd prefer to go to a practitioner that doesn't do that. I've been to a practitioner who does do that, and I felt more shit about myself. And then I have been to somebody who helped me to, she allowed me to pull out my own stuff without telling me how things were.
Yeah, beautiful. And you're right. There are so many, so many good people in self-development that do actually allow you to pull it apart yourself. Totally. I think modern Western psychology is starting to shift that way as well. But for a long time, it was all about, oh, let's talk about your problems. So let's make them bigger and amplify them and make them worse and then try and help someone. Yeah. It doesn't work.
No, I agree with you. I went to a psychologist, at two sessions, but I think, no, one session with a psychologist, and this was, I don't know, going back 7-8 years ago or something, and it was through my work. I was having some troubles with, I don't even remember what it was, I was having some troubles, and we were able to go and access these psychologists. So I went and had a session, and at the time I was a part of a network marketing business, and the psychologist bagged the crap out of the network marketing business and said to me, that's a shit, you know, they didn't say that's a shit business, but they pretty much did, and they could have just said those words, and it was like, hang on a minute, like, I don't need your opinion. I just need some support here and some guidance. But it was really interesting. Like, that really turned me off. I thought I'd hit 40, go study psychology and become a psychologist. And at that point in my life, I was like, whoa, no, that's not going to happen, because I choose. Yeah, it's more, for me, it's more about peeling back the layers, not deliberating in a problem. So really interesting. Yes. To all the psychologists out there, awesome. You're doing an amazing job as well. Like, each to their own. One bad experience doesn't mean that there's 100 psychologists like that. But I'm with you. In my experience, what I found is that psychology is talking constantly about the problems. I've done psych A and psych B in my studies as well. And yeah, it just didn't sit with me.
Yes. Yeah. I know lots of good psychologists as well. A very good friend of mine is amazing. So it's not all, I agree. It's
yeah. And just like anything, right? It's just an opinion.
Yeah.
So anything we say here today comes with a space of love. Yeah. And so no judgment, just is.
It's just observations. Yeah. And ultimately, like, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Like, I'm not here to tell anyone what's right or wrong. I can help you find your own answers, but you have to decide what's right for you. And that's it. That's all we can do.
Because it's your journey.
Exactly right.
It's
exactly.
Not my journey. My client's journey is not my journey. How can I say to them, hey, do this?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So true. I love, I'm going to see Muji in a couple of weeks in Portugal. And he said this funny thing once in one of his satsangs. He said that if someone comes up to you and they're like, oh my God, blah, 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 and they spill their whole story and they go, what do you think about that? And he just says, I don't think about that. I have no thoughts about that. He said, because if you engage in it, he's like, you're just going to be two crazy people talking about something that's not real. So.
Yeah, love that. Who is Suji? Did you say?
Muji.
Yeah.
Moji. So he's from the lineage of self-realization. He's the teachers above him were Papaji and Maharaji, Ramana Maharaji. And he is one of the few enlightened beings that walk the earth. So I'm going to spend a week with him in Portugal in 2 weeks. His teaching is predominantly silent. So we have satsang, where you can ask him questions, but the rest of the time you're silent. There's no eye contact, no reading, no writing, no exercise. Like, literally you're just in contemplation for 7 days. So I can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
Silent retreat before?
Not that long, no. I've done a mini Vipassana one, which was, I think, 3 days, like back in the day, like when I was like 26. So this will be interesting to see the comparison.
Was your past a reason that you decided to go the meditation route and the way that you have gone?
I think so, because when I meditate, I'm not in pain. So for so long, the only way I could stop pain was by external gratification, whether it was sleeping with randoms, whether it was taking ice, ecstasy, whatever I could get my hands on, essentially, prescriptions, anything. So then when I found meditation, I was able to actually feel good by just coming within myself, just connecting. And it's never been a huge struggle for me. A lot of people talk about meditation being a struggle. For some reason, I've never had a massive issue with quietening my mind in meditation. It's been quite natural. So that would definitely be why. It's the only thing that has helped me with my suffering.
I love that. What a beautiful practice.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And now I want to just do it. Now I try and meditate when I'm just moving and talking and do you know Don Miguel Ruiz, the Four Agreements?
Yeah.
Five Agreements. Oh my gosh. I've only read the agreements. I haven't read the book. I just saw an interview with his son once, and he was meditating in his room, and he's like, oh, and I'd been on this 10-day meditation retreat, and I came back and I felt like I was such a good meditator. I was in my room and my dad comes in and I got really angry at him for interrupting my meditation. And he's like, son, do you still see me as your teacher? And he said, yes, father, of course. He said, well, rather than sitting and meditating, why don't you try and do that in everyday life? And that really struck with me because it helped me begin to, I guess, transition from sitting and being still to everything being still. So not doing, just being. That's what I mean by not doing. Just be. We don't need to go anywhere. We're already there. We've just forgotten. That's it.
That's something that we were going to touch on today as well. So let's have a little bit more of a chat about that.
Yes. I feel like it's one of the hardest things that you can ever ask anyone to do. We're in a world where everything is about getting more, being somewhere. Everyone's rushed. Everyone's distracted. If you ask someone just to be, they think that you're completely insane. Maybe I am.
The best
but it's are. Best people are. Muji says you have to be insane in order to become enlightened. So I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. I've got a few credentials there. No, I'm actually joking. So it's simply, I do this with a lot of my clients who are fixated on external practices, and an external practice, providing it's a vehicle and whether you do it or not, you remain emotionally neutral. It's fine. It's when we get upset or our whole day is completely ruined because we didn't get to yoga or we didn't get to meditate or we didn't get to do, you know, today's chapter in A Course in Miracles. When that becomes an issue, when our emotional state is controlled by external factors, whether they're spiritual practices or not, we're kind of in trouble. So by just putting them all down, and my clients hate me for the first 4 days. I get them to this for 7 days. Just by putting everything down and just practicing, just being, just washing the dishes, putting the washing out, cooking your food, making everything just a moment to be present and be in that moment, then I feel like enlightenment or whatever we want to call it, being awakened, we can get there in an instant when we stop trying to get anywhere and realize we're already there. That's what it means.
Yeah, beautiful. We are such a driven nation where it is go, 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 and that stop. You know, I still am challenged sometimes by stopping. I'm very, very good at it in comparison to how I used to be. And I will take a sleep if I need one, or go get a massage if I need one, or just do nothing if I feel like it. Yet sometimes I still find it a little challenging, usually actually for that time of the month. So now when I'm bleeding, I take more time to stop, and I still find a bit of struggle with myself in that space. Interesting how it can be so challenging for us to just stop, right? To just enjoy, to let ourselves off the hook from having to be or do anything else.
Yes, without the judge, because the ego will want to jump in and judge us, because the minute we stop, it's like, oh shit, they could remember, they're already enlightened. Fuck, we're at risk of dying here. Let's get in. Judgment. Oh, you can't, you're lazy. Your mum would think that you're lazy. Look at that mess. You've got to, like, it just comes in and it attacks us. So one of the best things that I've ever learned in my journey is that if I'm under attack by the ego, it means I'm super close to something awesome. So instead of resisting it, I celebrate it. I'm like, yes, thank you, ego. I love you because I know I'm close. And the ego will only attack you if you're a truthful seeker. So if anyone tries this, if anyone tries to do the being and you do come under attack, celebrate it. The only way to relieve the ego, to dissolve it, to quieten it, is to send it love and gratitude. That's it. If we've resisted, it persists. So celebrate every moment it tries to attack you because it means you're getting really close.
I love that. I'm going to take that on. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. It's so exciting. I'm like, yes, like ego's coming. I'm close. Like I'm about to go to Muji and it's getting strong. Like external things are happening to pull me back into stuff. And it's like I feel like I'm under attack. And initially, because the nervous system triggers and you're like, panic. But then I remember, oh no, it's because I'm about to go to Muji and I could have an amazing awakening experience. Yes. And then it's like, it has nothing once you do that. It has nothing to cling to make you feel bad because you're happy about it being there.
And it's a protection mechanism, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why when I first realized that, that was when I was able to celebrate it. It only wants to keep us in the familiar zone. It doesn't, a lot of people in the spiritual world go, oh, the ego's so bad. It's not bad. It's just doing its job. Like, why would I hate a part of me that's kept me safe my whole life? It only is creating internal resistance. I want internal peace more than anything. So I'm just going to like accept it and love it because it's just doing its job.
Yeah, beautiful. Oh, Kate, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners today?
You're already awake. You're already enlightened that anything is possible. Anything. That if you have a truthful heart and you're seeking freedom, it is so much closer than you think. Just stick with it. Just stick with it. I promise you it's closer. If I can get out of the mess I was in, anyone can get out of anything.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I'm grateful you went through your mess, as you put it, because it brings you to where you are now, which is just an incredible being. You've always been an incredible being, but an incredible being doing some amazing stuff for our planet. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. And I thank you for all you do as well. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Oh, on that warm and fuzzy note, thank you to each and every single one of our guests who have tuned in for this episode. I will catch you next week. Till then.